Strike. I have Jeff Lemire, the writer of Animal Man, Frankenstein, Sweet Tooth. And after that, we have Denny McLett and Marco Rudy, the two artists on Swamp Thing. So we are here to talk to you today about the dark corners of the DCU. So first off, I'm going to lead in with a question for all of you. What are some of the most interesting aspects of essentially pushing the horror end of the DC 52?
Marco?
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's good. You should ask a writer, not an artist. Stuck with the writer, man. Come on.
Well, I think it was exciting for me because, I mean, coming from Vertigo and then doing Superboy and the Atom and stuff, there are a lot of limitations on sort of the sensibility I bring as a writer. And then when the New 52 started and I got offered these kinds of books and I'm a man of Frankenstein and stuff, it was really freeing again for me to almost be able to be myself again and not have to restrain my imagination or some of the, you know, darker aspects of my imagination. I could just really kind of go nuts again, but do it within the shared superhero universe was really cool.
Well, for me, I've been drawing comics for 17 years or something. It changed every year, so I lose track. Most of it was spandex, superhero, like sort of the standard, what you can expect from a comic. And as I grew older, I feel like it's harder and harder to... don't get me wrong, I love Batman, I can do it, and it's, I enjoy it. But it feels redundant a bit. So having the opportunity of exploring other genre, and to me it always has been a mystery why mainstream comic doesn't include more genre than only one tiny fraction of the possibility of fiction, which is like dudes and girls that can do special thing and think they should like be police or something. So there's all you can do Western. I wish I could do... Let's do a love story, like a book.
And so I'm thinking of
it is. And,
you want to do a love story right here, maybe?
Right. Come on. But really, it's over a book. And just before that, I'm thinking of, I did a pirate thing, which was a pure pirate story for Grant Morrison and Return of Bruce Wayne, which was, again, a genre piece for me. So that was something, which is, let's explore this, not this character, I don't care of character that much, this entirely other genre. Now I get inspired. And Swamp Thing, well, there is not only the fact that it's the genre that I've retouched, which is the horror aspect, but it's also poetic aspect of it. There is a beauty, I love nature. And I never get asked to draw any of it at all, most of the time. When you do Spider-Man, you can, you know, do... I never did Spider-Man, but I guess if I had to do it, I could probably spend a year not drawing a tree or, you know, just New York. Yeah. And now I can do insect and cicadas and barks and... See?
You can draw Central Park in Spider-Man, though.
Whatever. That's not the point.
So, I haven't been drawing comics for 17 years. Yeah, 17 years ago, I was in school. So, it's kind of a different thing for me because I've always been into superheroes, but I rapidly kind of thought that there are things that we don't see in comics, or we saw more in the Vertigo line when it started, the Vertigo line with Swamp Thing and stuff like that. And drawing that right now for me, it's a big challenge, especially because of this guy, because whatever he does, I have to do to make it look pretty, not as good as him, but just pretty, because reviewers, they... not cool. So right now it's just a new challenge. It's just a different challenge for me. It's not, again, not drawing the spandex superheroes, but it's also a book that gives me leeway to stretch my muscles, my layout muscles, which is basically how I draw comics. So it's kind of there for me, I guess.
So now I want to. How close do you guys work with the writer and artist like Jeff, working with Travel, and then Steve, and then you guys working with Scott?
I can go first. I think it really depends on what artist you're working with. My relationship with Steve Pugh, who's coming on the book, is much different than the relationship I have with Travel Foreman. Travel, it was much more all through the editors, you know, like we didn't really talk very much at all. And I'm not complaining or anything, it worked out great. I think we had great chemistry that developed somehow on the page, even though we didn't personally interact. But with Steve, it's much more personal, where we, you know, we're always sending emails and stuff like that. But I think I probably talk to Scott more than my artist, just because we're working on story all the time and stuff. So.
Yeah, I would say that of all the writers I've worked with maybe the exception of Adam Warren, which we spent too much time over the phone, Scott is probably the most open for communication that I've interacted with. And I work with Alan Moore and Grant Morrison, which you just cannot talk to them. They're almost not existing. There's no way to reach them. So, but at least Scott, we set up, you know, Skype date, and we talked for half a night about things. So there is a back and forth, especially at the beginning of the book when I was pushing some sort of graphic envelope to it. I wanted to go experimental with the borders and have all sort of crazy theory that terrorize people sometimes. And I've built that, and I've green-lighted with Scott. And this communication for me allowed me to somehow got confident into some of the most weird aspect, which I've maybe not been able to dare with another writer if my link with him would not be that close as I am. It's unclear. Everybody is informing? Yeah, well, it boils down to, because I'm close to Scott, I can try stuff and I feel safe.
that is so cute. I came late to the party to something, so that was already Yannick's and Scott's baby, but I kept always saying that I was just taking a ride and having fun. Basically, I talk to them with what I want to do on... Actually, I ask Scott what he wants to see, and then after that, I suggest some stuff that either him or Yanni, we talk about approval, and we go from there. It's pretty much like that.
Yeah. I would say that there is a bond between us, because I look at his layout, we talk about stuff, which is really rare between like two artists even on the same series, but usually the editor is doing this link, we just go back and forth between us.
It's kind of funny because before coming to something, I spoke to Yanni when I met him first, completely unrelated to something. We started talking about daring on layout storytelling and how we don't see that much in comics now, that there are specific artists that use this tool and zero after that. And when I got into something, it was interesting to see that it was like I came around in a circle to come to work with this guy, and it worked with this thing that we were just telling before that about daring storytelling and layout, stuff like that. So, yeah.
So, Jeff, you mentioned working with Steve Pugh, the Animal Man artist in the 90s, who had a well-received run of like 30-some issues. Was that somebody you specifically aimed for when getting him onto the book due to his past experience dealing with the Baker family?
Yeah, I mean, when I got the gig writing Animal Man, I went back. I had read everything, obviously, but I went back and reread the whole 80 or 90 issue run, whatever it was. And everyone's really kind of reveres the Grant Morrison run, and rightfully so. I think it's really great. But for me, rereading it all, the stuff that really hit me was the Steve Pugh and Jamie Delano run. That was the stuff that I thought had. They had sort of. I mean, actually, Jamie wrote the book longer than anyone. Grant only did 27 issues. Jamie did like 46
something.
So he really got into the family dynamic and really fleshed out the family. And they started to introduce the ideas in the Red and stuff that I really latched onto and kind of expanded upon. So that was a run that really influenced sort of my take on the character, actually. And one of the first artists I asked for was Steve, because I thought back then his stuff was ahead of its time. And even now, it certainly holds up perfectly, you know. It's not dated at all. And, so yeah, I asked for Steve at one point, I think, for a fill-in issue, and it just worked out well. And so it's really cool now. We were talking earlier how Yannick did visual things to sort of connect his version of Swamp Thing to the Bissette stuff and to kind of create a lineage. And it's kind of interesting now in a different way that we have this lineage between the old Animal Man stuff and the new, because we have the same artists working on it. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, to make just as a trivial fact, my first published work was something I never get paid for, never received my original back anyway. It was called, I don't remember, something about vampire. But that's not the question. The cover artist was Steve Hugh.
Oh, cool.
And then they just blew up like design that he did and slapped it onto the cover. They look awful. And one day I'll bring it to him and sign it. And I, you know, the cover doesn't look good, but they are my first published work, and I suck at them. I really suck.
How old are you?
19. But they're really, really bad. I mean, they're terrible.
Okay, so what are some of the challenges when it comes to writing / drawing creative properties that have had ties to such of the greats like Grant Morrison, Alan Moore, and like Bernie Wrightson?
Well, I think Scott and I discussed this a lot early on, because the Alan Moore run on Swamp Thing and the Grant Morrison run on Animal Man are probably two of the most, you know, respected kind of runs in modern comics history. So, I mean, it's very daunting to come onto those properties and try to recreate them or put your own stamp on them. And I think we both just reached a point early on where we realized if we tried to recreate what those guys did, or, you know, we would always just end up being compared to them, and there's no way you could come out favorably in that duel. So I think we both just decided early on that we had to just kind of sort of forget as much of that as we could and just kind of do it our own way and kind of have a confidence in ourselves, the storytellers, and put our own stamp on it. But there's also a balance where you want to be respectful of what's come before and create some kind of a connection to it as well. So there really is a balance between using the old stuff and referencing it, but also just trying to make it new again, make it mine, and, you know, put my own personality into it. So.
Well, for me, even before doing Swamp Thing, if I had to describe my roots as an artist, Bernie Wrightson in the more, you know, classic illustrative branch of comic is what is really my, you know, my origin, my secret origin. So by getting to do Swamp Thing, it's almost like if I was coming home somehow. I feel like doing Swamp Thing make a lot more sense than doing, say, the X-Men, although I did X-Men. But Swamp Thing, I really feel at home. I feel it as a natural gesture to art back to my masters, that not just because, oh, they did Swamp Thing before me, I'm going to say, yeah, I'm gonna add these links, but because they're it's deeper than that. They really influence my philosophy of illustration. So it was just natural to go really deep with my and I stylistically I was emulating some of the Total Benefect and by my the way I'm doing lights, although it might look very Kevin Nolan-y. Part of it come from Wrightson. And I felt like I needed to do more, and I did put some eggs. I guess we're going to talk about eggs later. Eggs. They're good with bacon.
I really like that I'm the third guy here, because I can just agree.
Yeah. Bacon's a great
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just Really? I agree, so yeah.
All right. We have an agreement?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah, for Yannick, you just mentioned like Easter eggs, because readers have noticed a bunch from having like Wrightson's name on a diner to Andy Diggle having his own brand of like shotgun shells. Do those runs have a special place in your heart, or are there any readers might have missed?
Initially I started. Okay, the thing is, when I draw reality, like, oh, this is a town, and I have like all these signs up there, I don't know what to put on them. Jamie Pizza, you know. After a while, you get like, this is. I'm not supposed to spend time thinking about this. I have like this entire page to draw, and I'm screaming at the studio, "Give me a name for a shoe store," and you know. And it dawned on me that I could just use name of the masters of the past. So I went for Wrightson dinner, and I thought, "Oh, this is Total Ben Hotel was actually the first one," and. And then Lynn Digger, also, which was like
crazy,
man. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. And it became like almost a rule. Every time I had to write something, a street corner, a number on something, it had to mean things about Swamp Thing. I can fairly say that at this point I ran out of ideas. And plus, I can say that, but... there were some people that are looking for these things are asking me, how come there's no Alan Moore in these things, right? And, the thing is, I would have, if it was only me, I would have put Alan on, like, a big knife or something. It's a badass thing. But I think DC was kind of... You know, it's a beehive. This thing, they don't want to disturb anything. And also Rick Veitch, I don't know what's going on internally, and they don't want to go there. But I would, at this moment, can say that personally, as an artist, not associated with any of the DC whatever legal bound of it, they are my masters,
and I love them. Since you're running out of ideas, you should just go for the very famous issues and start pointing street issue number 75.
Yeah, well, I did a card set called The Anatomy Lesson, where you can collect pieces of bodies, and it's all designed in my head actually. It's in convenience store.
Yeah,
is that it? And there's just a box of cards. Anatomy Lesson is that the very famous Alan Moore reinvention of Swamp Thing. That's it. That's all I have to say.
Okay, so obviously there's going to be a huge Animal Man Swamp Thing crossover because Speaky Teen teases of it. Can you explain to everyone like what is going to partake in and what issues it runs through?
Yeah, I just wrote the first chapter this week, so it's really exciting. Let me see. It starts at issue 12 of each series, and it probably will run. We're thinking issue 17 is just the last chapter. So, there's a little leeway there. You might go a little shorter, a little longer as we really get closer to it. But it's called Dead World. What else can we tell you? It's about all I can tell you.
It's going to be great, though.
It's going to be good. Plants.
It's about animals and plants.
It's going to be fantastic. Yeah, for me, the real challenge, I'm super excited about this. I've read the outline and I'm like giggling at the idea of it. And now it's just a question of fitting it in my schedule because I'm super slow. So, but I have a backup, so we will prepare.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be awesome.
But yeah,
there will be plants
and
animals.
Does anyone have questions about the crossover they want to answer? I'll answer one question truthfully.
Oh my God, choose wisely.
And I'll answer one untruthfully. And you guys.
Since the red and green have been pretty evident since the beginning of the New 52. Did you and Scott kind of have the idea for the crossover since even before the whole relaunch started, or did you have the idea once you got assigned to the books? Or
no, because I wasn't on Animal Man before the New 52. Right. It kind of came out. Scott was going to be on Swamp Thing before the New 52 was an official thing. They were already planning that book. And he and I were talking about Swamp Thing a lot, just sort of... I wasn't offered Animal Man until the New 52 was a thing that was actually happening. So, but yeah, I mean, it's hard to remember when the actual crossover ideas started, but it was really early on, because the more we talked, the more our ideas started intersecting, and just kind of grew into that. It definitely wasn't a thing that, like, DC came to us and said, you have to have a crossover or just boost sales, you know. It was more like just two writers coming up with stories, and then we went to them, and they were excited about it.
Is that the untruthful one that you want?
That might be the
untruthful. That was so truthful. Touching at all.
Well, we know this one would be a line, I think.
Oh. Yeah.
Always changing, because you're always looking for new things to inspire you and get excited about, so I can go back to different points in my career or in my life. And, you know, I was really into Alan Moore when I was, you know, 19, 20, and then right now I'm really into Mobius, actually, and that was the sad news this morning that he passed away. So it's always, and it's not just, I think the important thing as a storyteller, whether it's artist or writer, is that you look to things outside of comics as well to influence you, because it can become very isolated if you're always just reading comics and being influenced by comics. So I'm always, to be truthful, I read more real books than comics these days, because I'm looking for different voices. And you get influenced by film, by music, by, you know, everything, and try to absorb it and use what you like and discard what you don't. But yeah, it's always changing as you're changing and sort of working on new projects. You might get into different artists that kind of have done things in that genre in the past or whatever.
I got about the same thing. I discovered that I have a weird cycle where I'll love, like, so I discover somebody and I'll love it, like, and then I'll get all right. Not bored, but these, I think I've incorporated what I have to learn, and then 10 years later, we stumble on these things, and I see it from my different, where I am now as an artist, and I discover it again, and I get it's reckless, and I go into my old books and try to find, I had this issue with where, but yeah, me too. I mean, I barely read comics, and I would say that a lot of my influence are coming from outside of comics. The core would be probably the very old American stuff, like Plants Via, all the Jameson, the AC stuff. Strangely, because when I was growing up in Montreal, what I could see from the American graphic world was French version, like trade paperback of these old AC in black and white. And for years I thought that was... And that was... John Byrne was doing Fantastic Four, but I thought that Owen Jameson was the absolute king until I discovered it. When I discovered a comic book shop, it was almost like if I stepped in the future. The basic of what's inspired me is the older guys, the old illustrative generation, and also music. I love classical counterpoint, and I think it shows my work. That's only me. But really, when I do make pictures, I use the space as, when I write music, I use time. Oh boy, I'm losing you guys. Hey. But yeah, it's way out there. But yeah, to me, there's a very connection between graphic space and time, sound space. Say something, Ruby.
Just save me. Again, being on the
third spot's awesome. I agree. But in this case, I agree. The point is, similar to Yannick, I grew up reading, actually, not similar to Yannick, but I grew up reading European comics. I'm not American, I'm not even Canadian or whatnot. I'm from a different altogether continent that we're not very much into comics over there, especially now. But when I was younger, we would read lots of French comics. And a particular Spanish artist called Esteban Maroto. And this guy has been an influence for me ever since the beginning. And it's funny because the book that he drew is called, in English, would be Five for Infinity. And there's a funny story about Alan Moore in this book that I won't say. I'd rather you guys find out. But it's Alan Moore did a book called Zero Patrol. Google that up. Yeah. So when I was four, I got that book. And it's a sci-fi book with naked women in it. It was cool, man. I was four.
How can it not be cool?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was really noticing the female shape when I was four. But
that's a thing.
It came around to me because when I started working in comics in, I think it was 2006, yeah, 2006, a teacher in architecture, I was studying architecture, and a teacher presented me this book. Are you familiar with this? Because he said it, my artwork was good. And it was the very same book that I had read when I was four. It was pretty cool. So basically, from then on, I started searching the stuff that I read back and getting more acquainted with comics nowadays. On a regular basis, I always go for... The way that I do comics is very much focused in graphic and design and storytelling, layouts, layout composition. So I always look for stuff, even outside of comics, I watch a lot of cartoons. I could, for instance, I think you guys are familiar with Freakazoid.
Yeah.
So Freakazoid is a cartoon that bends pretty much every rule in cinema storytelling, where he goes out of the story, stops the play, he does whatever he wants to do in that thing. So I love that. I love that he dares to tell you a story in a different way. So I look for sources of inspiration like that. Not specifically Freakazoid. I won't. I watch movies. I read books, even poems that kind of drift me away from that. So that's pretty much it. I think. And music, lots of metal.
Metal guy.
Hails, yeah.
I'm the barrel guy.
I listen to classic too, but come on, man, that was good.
Telemann rule.
So in correlation to the crossover, are there any other books that might see light of the events going on between Animal Man and Swamp Thing?
No other books are crossing over with it. It's very much contained to Animal Man and Swamp Thing, but that doesn't mean that other characters from the DC Universe won't be in those two books during the crossover.
Oh, is it issue, I think it's 9 of Frankenstein?
Yeah, that was my last issue. I actually was going to go out on 8. Frankenstein, but they said, why don't you do one more and do like a fun Animal Man thing? And I said, sure. So yeah, in issue 9 of Frankenstein, and he goes to kind of investigate Buddy Baker and his disappearance and what's happened, and he kind of has this strange encounter with the rat. It's really fun, and Frankenstein may or may not be a part of the crossover.
So Yannick and Marco, I guess we kind of did just touch on it, but where do you find, I guess, a lot of your reference material for creating such beautiful horror pieces? Because
we're twisted secret people.
You don't want to know.
We're twisted sick people.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess there's no way around it.
Your Google search.
I'm so flagged.
Also, the thing
dead horses and head. Stuff like that.
If you've seen like that horse's head, the Godfather. If you've seen The Fly. If you've seen like pretty old 80s bad horror movies, you'll probably see them on Swamp Thing.
Yeah, well, my take on it is a bit different though. I start with, well, my vision of what's really freaked me out is when reality is just off by a tiny bit. Like, oh, this person is so asymmetric. What's going on? So I'll probably go and Google image horses, like the live version, and then just distort it. So I love to strongly base my horror on reality and just drift away a bit. So yeah, all the crazy and that's one of the things I've been looking forward to enforce in the rut is that the rut is not. Is not hell, is not monster from another dimension that just jumped. They reek from evil and orcs and stuff. They're just nature gone perversely wrong.
Yeah.
It's the normal thing just went you're the writer, what I'm looking for as a word.
I don't write your poems.
We can live with this. We can live with that. The nature just go.
Goes where?
Because where?
Ask you.
Yeah. Ask you. See, that's why you're a writer.
It's. I take a lot of influence off old movies, and I'm also a gamer, so. There are some twisted games like Dead Space or Resident Evil. Even Resident Evil, even not that much, but Dead Space. There are some very twisted creatures there, and there are humans that are twisted. So it kind of goes to the same point. So I don't go for that as in okay, let me put the Dead Space creatures in the rot, but no, but the way they are. Conceived, it's the pretty much a similar way of how I would conceive the crazy creatures on something.
I was just wondering, when it comes to matching an art style, is there challenges like that for you guys? Like, I know Yannick, he starts off with his kind of idea of Swamp Thing. Is there any difficulties with you kind of trying to match that and go along with his vision?
The thing is, from the start, I asked that he would not do that, and I don't think he does. We similar, in terms of what we think is good, what we want to see, and we have some sort of a similar sensibility. But I don't think you're making like a physical like straining it for not gonna draw like he does.
At the beginning, I was kind of overwhelmed because. I am pretty young in comics. I've only been doing DC stuff for 3 years, and both these guys have been doing comics for a lot of time. And I know Yannick's art from long. And when they said you'd be doing like you'd be pairing up with Yannick, I'm like, seriously? There's a difference here. And actually, when drawing, at least from my understanding, when drawing a page. You will see that Yannick's pages, they are hyper-detailed. They're very, very detailed. My pages, I go for something different. I always focus much more on what the layout will tell you, and then I'll go for the time permitting. I'll put in the detail that I can. So, at the beginning, I was worried that I wanted to match him. I'm going to do super detailed pages because I can do them faster. Pretty rapidly, I just got back to my own self, as in to just do your own stuff and go from there. And people have been digging it, so that's good.
So, Jeff, with you taking over Justice League Dark, do readers need to have gone through the previous issues to understand what the direction with the new team will be?
No, I tried to what I try to do is write my first issue, issue 9, which starts in, it comes out in May, and I tried to write it as if it was the first issue, so it's completely accessible to new readers, you know? And I think part of that was because I was changing the team around a little bit. A part of it was just because I wanted to put my own stamp on it and stuff. But I've tried to make it accessible in a way that you can not have read any of those characters in the past, and you can pick up that issue and very quickly get a pretty good sense of who each member is and what they're up to.
Sweet. And with the new team, you're adding Andrew Pettit, the guy from iVampire. Will the actions between each book have repercussions in each title, respectively?
trying to think. Yeah, sorry, I'm thinking.
Like currently, right now, it's the crossover coming up. It's Rise of the Vampires.
Yeah, I come on after that stuff.
Oh, cool.
So no, this is kind of, you know, I try to write it as much as I can, self-contained, to its own thing. I think if anything, it's probably more closely connected to the Geoff Johns, Jim Lee Justice League than it is to some of the other Dark books, which might seem weird, but which is why I think it's interesting to put those weird characters and contrast them with more straight-laced superheroes, to me, is more interesting. It brings out their personality a lot quickly than putting them with all the other Dark characters, right? So, in much the way that I'm working with Scott on Swamp Thing and Animal Man, I've been working really closely with Jeff on the Justice stuff now, and we have some stuff planned down the line where the whole Justice League franchise will kind of gel out into something much more connected and coherent.
I was just curious, 7 months on from the launch of the New 52, what's your take on where that project is at right now? And kind of what are your perceptions of DC Editorial's take on where their project is right now? Because, I mean, some of these, the sales numbers for the early issues were just extraordinary in comparison with, you know, the recent decks, 200,000 copies on Justice League number one, and now it seems to have leveled off a bit, and titles are getting canceled, and there seem to be these crossover efforts. Is that sales-driven or artistically driven?
But I think everybody was expecting such curve, like having a huge bump in the sales with all the promotion and the money behind the exposure of it. And nobody is really freaking out. Oh my God, we're like half, you know, we lost half the sales. And it's that was to be expected. I'm not reading the entire, well, I don't read comic, totally frank. But to me, the way I see it is that the gain that we had and the New 52, like the Dark, the DC Dark, are still prevalent. I mean, that entire branch was not existing, and we do well. I think we do well, and this is just personal, and it kind of arc to what I was saying before about not being overly enthusiastic about just superhero stuff. This DC Dark branch really took the opportunity of trying something new, like they were banging. Now we're gonna do it. It's new. It's new DC, but we are really doing a new DC stuff in DC Dark, and I think that's why it works so well, because it indeed bring fresh blood. I don't want to say that the other books are just rehashing the same thing. I'm not gonna point fingers at anyone, but I would say that maybe in some title, the opportunity of really pushing the envelope and doing different has been sometimes missed a bit, yeah. I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to speak. I'm not going to speak for DC Comics because, I only write 2 books, so I'm not going to talk about what their thoughts are, what's motivating the crossovers and stuff. I can only speak of personally in my books, and like I said before, our crossover was motivated from the creators and from story and not from editorial wanting to boost sales and stuff, so but I mean, in general, I think, you know, when you launch 52 new comics, they're not all going to be gold, right? But I think there's a lot more stuff that I'm enjoying now than I was previously, just as a reader, and I also think that it's given an opportunity to books like if Animal Man were to launch without the whole New 52 hype behind it, it would probably have sold like 12,000 copies and got canceled after five issues. Mm-hmm. But now it's selling almost 50,000 copies every month, and it's, you know, it gave a platform to a book, to books like that, and if they were of a certain quality and captured people's imagination, it seems to have really caught on. So I can't complain. For me, creatively, it's been amazing because I'm getting to write this book and you know, plan ahead to issue 20, 25, 50, you know, like, whereas before, if I was writing Animal Man, I probably would presume I'd get like six issues.
You just said that you're going to stay on Animal Man until issue 50.
I'm going to beat all the previous writers. I have to. I think Zeleno has 40 something, so I'm going to.
That thing earned it.
Yeah.
Was the Dark something that was conceived there from the very beginning, or did it evolve as a kind of brand?
I don't know, because I like a lot of these decision stuff were made behind closed doors with editorial stuff. You know, we were just offered books and we pitched ideas, and I think as ideas started coming in, they could see little groups forming. Like, I think me and Scott, since we were talking so much, I don't think when they offered me Animal Man, I don't think they saw it as like a Dark book or a horror comic. I think they just saw it as a superhero comic, right? But when they saw my pitch for it, they realized, oh, that really fits in with, you know, with what Scott's doing on Swamp Thing. And, you know, so I think they started to see ways to market it, market this kind of a book here and group it together that way. So, yeah, but again, those were all discussions that were, I wasn't a part of. So.
Okay, so I got one more, and then we'll open up to questions. Just as comic book fans in general, now that we're already on issue 7, what are your favorite ones of the DC 52?
I think my favorite books are probably All-Star Western, Batwoman, when J.H. Williams draws it. Scott's Batman's really great, I think. I mean, I like a lot of the Dark stuff, obviously. But I'm also really involved in it, so it's kind of hard to separate myself from it. But outside of the Dark stuff, I'm trying to think what else is really... Wonder Woman I'm really enjoying. Yeah, those are the ones that come to mind, so I guess those are the ones.
And Yannick, for the ones you do...
Yeah, well...
Let's talk about what we don't like.
Oh, yeah, it's much more focused on. It's a lot more exciting. Yeah, but the pretty much the same list. I would add maybe The Flash.
Yes, Flash. That one's great.
What else? But then again, I've been repeating, I'm not reading comics. So, all this is because I've been flipping through them, because I do receive a huge box of comics every month. So
rubbed it up on their faces. Get it for free.
Free.
I get
Monthly.
So many free comics.
Sometimes it's just there on the table.
I lay in my bed and it's covered.
All trades.
I make dresses with them.
All hard covers.
And all my furniture is made of these.
And sculpture too. I do receive the sculpture now.
Oh yeah, the toys.
I don't know. I don't know what to do with them. I don't care.
Again, rub it in.
I'm cruel. Just true, but yeah, I would at least look at the, obviously GH when he's doing something like turning. I'm like, oh god, he turned. It's cool. So this the dark line in general. I have Empire. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that one. I like Aquaman. Aquaman's pretty fun.
Yeah. I don't like crazy transition. What about sausage?
Yeah, oh yeah. I don't like sausage. Yeah. The thing is, it's not that I don't read comics, it's just that nowadays I haven't been reading anything recent aside the book that I'm drawing. And I'm sorry. But it's just that I have been kind of distant of nowadays comics. I just go back to older stuff that I really like. So, and I've always been a Marvel fan.
Oh my god! Shut the machine!
So, yeah. I've been reading Excalibur, man. it's pretty good. Yeah, Alan Davies. Awesome. It's a fun book. I mean, you remember when teen books were just fun? Nice stories, funny characters, not huge crossovers. Just a fun book. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I like it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, so now does anybody have any questions? In the back corner.
You can tell us the Ray Palmer character.
Sorry, I didn't quite hear. I just heard Ray Palmer.
Ray Palmer
mm-hmm.
in Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Do you know of any plans to bring back the Atom?
Yeah, there are plans, but nothing I'm allowed to say. He's not going to be the Atom in Frankenstein, that's all I can say. He's going to stay as Dr. Ray Palmer in that book, although we do get to see him use his powers next issue.
We'll do him and then
Yenny.
Yeah, I don't
know. Your Justice League Dark is bringing back a Black Orchid. Is that a Black Orchid we've seen before?
No, it's a brand new incarnation of the character.
So just like taking over, are you bringing back Zatanna's hats? And will you see Jeffrey the Shadow Hat?
I got the first part. Was the second?
Will you bring back Zatanna's hats?
Uh-huh.
And will we see members of Shadow Pact at some point?
Former members. Zatanna's hat will appear in issue, my first issue, yes. And what the hell, Shadow Pact? Any of those guys show up? I don't think so. Not yet. DC's really diverse to all those characters for some reason, but I love Nightmaster and Detective Chimp, so if I can sneak him in at some point, I will.
You could see them with Zatanna's hat, though.
Yeah, their insider hat. Just imagine it. But I am bringing back a ton of older occult supernatural DC characters. A whole bunch of people are coming back that I couldn't wait to write, you know, like Mr. E and Dr. Occult and people like that will eventually work their way into it.
Okay, so we need your question.
Yeah, I have a question. I actually had this question for months. I've asked Matt. I ask everybody. Everybody like, in the Animal Man, Dan Green is inking something? Is it the same Dan Green that I know?
It is.
Like Dan Juicy Dan? Dan Green Dan?
I have no idea.
You don't know?
The first issue, I don't know. He's been around for a while.
Because I, you know, Dan Green is one of these anchors which is very gestural, juicy, with, you know, use his brush and just give ink. And it works. It looks bad. It sounds bad, but it gives art. It's great. I mean, he was inking Silvestri on...
Yeah, that's the guy. It is.
That's the guy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So he inked me on Gambit years ago. Because I've asked for him because I just love his thing. And I was looking at Animal Man and I couldn't find a trace of his style.
Yeah, no, Travel's very, very distinct style.
I haven't seen the bitch. I agree. Yeah.
But he only did part of the first issue. That's it.
Okay. I guess that's explained.
Aaron, further. Yes.
For the Swamp Thing team, was there a fear in not having the titular character in the book until issue 7, or were you very trusting to that?
No, there was not a fear. The idea was to tease you until then.
You were more confident than me.
Come on, I'm trying to help you.
I don't know. I would say that it's a testament to Scott.
Yeah.
You know, ability and wisdom. I was getting a script, and by issue 5, I was concerned. I was, but where's the beast?
Scott was concerned too, trust me.
Yeah. Right. People will just give up. They will leave. They will stop it. I mean, it's one thing, it's not there. And Matt, our editor, was like, and we've been daring enough to go all the way to issue 7, and when in issue 7 Swamp Thing eventually gets there, the payoff is so strong.
Yes.
And it's really because Scott had the balls really to not, you know, and also he wanted to explore and exploit the human, because knowing pretty much that as soon as he turn into a monster, that human is gone. Where there's, you know, his voice is being merged with something else, and we cannot really explore it again. So I was freaking out.
I wouldn't want to speak for Scott, but I actually just had a conversation about that with him, like Thursday or something, where we were talking about, I think his reasoning behind it was, Alec Holland himself has never really been a character, because even from the first Bernie Wrightson thing, he dies right away.
Page two is gone.
So Scott wanted to really try to make him a real character before he became Swamp Thing, so that when he is Swamp Thing, he's not just a mumbling monster. He's you know who the person inside is.
I don't know who's worked for Marvel in the past or not, but if you have or if you potentially would in the future, what would be the characters that you'd love to work on the most?
At Marvel, right?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
You love Marvel. Go on.
I don't love Marvel. I just grew up reading. Okay, I start reading comics, American mainstream comics, through Marvel. My favorite characters are Marvel characters, but
come on, spill it. Who would you draw?
Oh, you'd be surprised, Doctor Strange.
Oh, it's a good choice. Good
that would give me the chance to play all the crazy that I love. I will never, ever get a chance to draw Daredevil, because I will never get a chance to draw Daredevil. That's it. That's pretty much. The artist that I've been portrayed on that book, starting with David Mazzucchelli, is just... Yeah. It's here. So, yeah, I would love to draw Doctor Strange or Daredevil. I'll never draw Daredevil. Doctor Strange, people won't buy the book, so I'll probably never draw that.
Yeah, well, no. I spent 5 years exclusive at Marvel, where I did mostly X-Men. I did Uncanny X-Men, Young X-Men, Ultimate X-Men, Civil War X-Men, X-Men Destiny something.
Farmville X-Men.
every incarnation of it, and a bunch of Wolverine incarnation also. And but yeah, when they were asking me what I want to do, I went to Marvel to do the X-Men dance, because in my mind, I was coming out from 2 years of Alan Moore Terra Obscura thing, and I was going into convention, and people would look at me and say, "Ooh, you draw kind of okay. You should try to get a job." And yeah, but I've been working with Alan Moore for 2 years, and it was pretty obvious that I should do some mainstream, like high profile thing. So I just went straight for X-Men, and I did that for 2 years. But I was asking for Doctor Strange, and they told me no way.
Oh, yeah.
Because Brian Bendis, I'm going to tell you this now, so if you're like trying to go in there tomorrow, want to get the thing is, Brian has use of Doctor Strange as the Illuminati, as the like the higher brainy masterminds of the Marvel universe, and so using the guy with like crazy weirdo adventure like it used to. Like, I remember P.K. Russell did some amazing Foley with the character. This is out. Yeah. No, it's not that anymore. My fantasy would be that Alan Moore with the dead will never happen. That Alan Moore would write.
Oh, that would be awesome.
A Doctor Strange with all his notion of what is a wizard for real. That will never happen. I'm saying that, but we know this. It's not a myth.
Yeah, you were totally turning into Merlin or something.
I don't know.
I would do the Punisher. That's
right. Oh, yeah.
Looks like we got time for one more, so... die in the back.
Okay, I have a question about... what you've been doing on Animal Man recently, like the past like 6-7 issues, you really kind of create mythology, kind of change some things, but really like you create a whole new world. For me, like I've read some grand stuff, you really brought that
Yeah, I mean, to me, as soon as I started writing the book, it wasn't, it really shouldn't be called Animal Man, it should be called The Bakers, you know, because they're all each the star of the book, all four members, so I tried to create a mythology and a story that gave them each a chance to be equally as important. I think an interesting thing I've started to do with issue 9 and 10 stuff that I've written now is that we'll see the red, this notion I'll introduce where the red and the green take on the personality of specific avatar, so we'll start to see Maxine shaping the red based on her imagination, and it becomes almost this fairy tale world with castles and stuff. And it's really fun to expand on these ideas that these guys introduced, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
So I give it up for Jeff Amir.